Berry's tack-sharp brain had been working hard on the statute of limitations question. His theory was this. The girls could not possibly have brought a lawsuit until they knew the company was to blame, as the firm had actively conducted a campaign to mislead the girls. It should not be allowed to rely upon the delay which it had caused as a defence. After all, due to the misdirection, the girls' certain knowledge came only with Martland's formal diagnosis in July 1925. In Berry's view, therefore, the two-year clock did not start ticking until that moment. It was now May 1927. They were just in time. With not a moment to lose, Berry began preparations for a lawsuit. Grace's case would be the first to be filed, perhaps because she had been the first to call on him, or maybe because she was stronger than Catherine in terms of her mental health. She was also, in Hoffman's words, a very estimable person employed by one of Newark's largest business corporations. Berry may well have known that USRC's lawyers would be looking for any chink in their armour, and Grace's good character stood them all in good stead. Thus, on 18th of May 1927, Grace's formal complaint was filed against the radium firm. It made for uncomfortable reading for USRC. Berry charged that they had carelessly and negligently put Grace at risk so that her body became impregnated with radioactive substances which continually attack and break down the plaintiff's tissues, causing great pain and suffering. And he concluded, "Plaintiff demands $125,000 damages on the first count." There were two counts included. In total, Grace was suing her former firm for a cool $250,000. They kind of had it coming. From the very start, Grace's case attracted heart-rending headlines that supported her cause. Her body wasting, she sues employer. Woman appears in court with steel frame to hold her erect, declared the Newark Evening News after Grace's first appearance in court to file the papers. And such coverage, combined with the friendship networks of the girls, soon led to other dial painters coming forward. Quinta MacDonald was one, with her sister Albina beside her. And with these married women, Berry now launched lawsuits not only for them, but also for their husbands. As Berry wrote in legal papers for Quinta's partner, "James MacDonald lost the services of his wife and will in the future be deprived of the comfort and aid of her society and will be compelled to expend large sums of money in an endeavour to treat and cure his wife. Plaintiff James MacDonald demands $25,000. Adding the husbands to the lawsuits wasn't an excessive gesture. The truth was that it was increasingly impossible for Quinta to be the wife and mother she wanted to be. She admitted, "I do what housework I can nowadays. Of course, I can't do much. I can't bend over now." Given her extreme disability, she and James had recently been forced to hire a housekeeper, another expense. Her sister Albina was in dire need of aid too. Her left leg was now 4 inches shorter than her right, leaving her crippled and bedridden. She and James had not given up on their dream of a family, but she had since suffered a miscarriage, leaving her feeling worse than ever. "Life," Albina said dully, "is empty for me and my husband." And there was someone else who was suffering. Edna Hussman had been released from her year-long sentence in her plaster cast, but her ailments continued. Her left leg shrank by 3 inches, Her right shoulder became so stiff it was impossible for her to use her arm, and her blood tests showed she was anemic.